Vic Sage and the Projectionist, hosts of the Saturday Frights podcast, while working in the Retroist vault, find themselves under assault from a force of evil, an evil from the Projectionist's past. In an effort to save the vault, they're forced to carry out an emergency lockdown. With no possibility of escape, the two must enter a makeshift portal, linking them to the Projectionist's haunted drive-in. Being shoved through the portal by his co-host, Vic Sage vanished. He awoke to find himself transported to the haunted drive-in, but in the past of an alternate timeline. Due to a malfunction in the portal, the duo were merged into one being, with Sage being stuck in the Projectionist's younger body and his co-host trapped deep within Sage's subconscious, acting as his voice of reason. The only link to their own timeline was a portable recording device, disguised as a small briefcase, acting as their only communication to the Retroist Vault and possibly their only way home.
And now, on with the show.
All right, Projectionist, that makes 141 boxes of Milk Duds.
That should be 150, Victor.
I think we might have a case of a concession worker with sticky fingers.
Indeed. I would bet my eye teeth that it is young Jesse that is the culprit.
You totally have it out for that guy, Projectionist. What makes you think he's the one who took the Milk Duds?
Have you not seen his acne, Sage? How could you not suspect the young man?
Well, you have a point there, my friend. But let's take the high road here and assume they were incorrectly rung up as another item.
Go ahead and let Jesse rob us blind.
We have a lot more inventory to take care of before the night is through, so your grumbling isn't going to speed things up. Man, this was the one thing I hated doing back in my youth when working at the Razorback. Every single popcorn tub and soda cup had to be accounted for. Every little item, including the butter salt containers, had to be counted.
Butter salt. That is quite tasty.
Projectionist, while we're on the subject of popcorn, I've talked this over with some of my fellow former Razorback co-workers. Did you ever find yourself just eating popcorn even though you weren't hungry while you were on the job?
What?
Yeah, we would be all caught up in our duties, cleaning and restocking, and while we were standing at the counter, we would just unconsciously start eating the popcorn from the warmers. Whether we were hungry or not, it was almost like it was just something to do.
No, Victor. I did not just stand there like a grazing cow. Apparently, unlike you, I was too busy running a drive-in.
We weren't grazing, just bored. It's not like we were grabbing handfuls of popcorn or anything like that. Just, oh, hey, the briefcase recording light is on.
Are you sure the Retroist isn't operating that infernal device remotely? How does it keep coming on by itself?
I don't know, Projectionist. But can you say anything makes sense since we've been sent here?
Good point. Well, dear listeners, not sure how much you heard, but Sage and I are in the middle of doing inventory for the Starlight, Starbright Family Fun Drive-In.
You mean the monotonous chore of counting the inventory. On the bright side, Bill is away this weekend, so I haven't had to walk on eggshells, accidentally answering questions or sarcastic comments from the Projectionist.
This is simply the burden you must bear. While you were in control of my body, Sage.
I suppose so. I guess we can get the podcast started then. Might help to ease the burden of doing this inventory. Why don't you tell the listeners of the subject for this show, Projectionist?
Certainly. We will be discussing an episode of the Twilight Zone anthology television series that originally was aired on June 1st, 1962. Upon the Columbia Broadcasting System. The Changing of the Guard.
Friends, this is hands down one of my top 10 favorite Twilight Zone episodes. It is one of the two episodes that have a Christmas theme, the other being the 1960 episode Night of the Meek, which honestly is another of my favorite episodes. But The Changing of the Guard is just a tad more darker. Having said that, though, I feel I should add there is an unbelievable amount of warmth from the characters, and such an absolute truth in its message. I move to tears every single time I watch it. I rank Serling's writing on this episode right up there with their tearing down Tim Riley's bar from the Night Gallery series. I would say that The Changing of the Guard's story is more straightforward, but thanks to that script, and of course, the actor they've chosen to portray the lead, Professor Ellis Fowler, who is played by none other than Halloween's Donald Pleasance. This episode just shines, and does so brightly. By the way, I was first introduced to this episode not in reruns, but after purchasing it on VHS. It also happened to be at a very low point in my young adulthood.
What do you mean?
Projectionist. I can say now I was most certainly suffering from depression. But thankfully, things didn't get quite as bad as they seemed to for Professor Fowler.
Perhaps it's time for you to stop dawdling and get to the synopsis. You might even be able to show a little restraint and keep it from being 20 minutes, eh?
Wow. Am I ever grateful I didn't have you in my head back then? Sheesh. As the episode begins, we are introduced properly to the aged Professor Ellis Fowler, who is a teacher of 51 years at the Rock Spring School for Boys in Rock Spring, Vermont. A poetry teacher at that. And judging by his interactions with his students, it would appear they do not exactly put as much stock in the worth of A.E. Houseman as Fowler does.
They are, to use Professor Ellis Fowler's own words, dear listeners, a class full of dunderheads.
It's true that he does call them that. But the great thing about that, thanks to the direction of the episode by Robert Ellis Miller, and of course Donald Pleasance's performance, is we are absolutely shown that Fowler truly cares for each of his students. His calling out a couple of students' mistakes are all handled good-naturedly, so there isn't any real sting from him pointing out those errors. I wonder if Serling gave the character his first name in honor of Robert Ellis Miller. This is Miller's only Twilight Zone episode, so maybe it's just a coincidence.
I would say that is exactly what it is. You are correct about Professor Ellis Fowler caring for his students. Do you feel, though, Victor, that perhaps the good professor isn't quite aware how much he is boring his students?
Yeah, I think you may be right. Fowler is certainly sharing poetry that means a great deal to himself, but it looks like it's mostly falling on deaf ears, with his students as they look pretty bored. Pleasance, as I mentioned a little earlier, is playing an aged man. The actor was only 42 when he took on this role, his first, in fact, for American TV audiences. But thanks to the wonderful makeup effects by William Tuttle, he certainly looks like a man in his late 60s, or possibly early 70s.
I agree with your assessment of the makeup, Sage. To a point, some of the close-ups, the makeup looks a little dodgy.
I didn't think so.
Perhaps you were having trouble seeing clearly through those tears you shed while watching.
Would you agree at least that Pleasance sells his performance as a man 30 years older than he truly was, Projectionist?
Yes. On that we agree.
Small victory has been won then. Thanks to Serling's decision to have Fowler recite some poetry by A.E. Houseman entitled A Shropshire Lad, we the viewers are made aware, and subtly, that the professor has reached a point in his life where he's begun to doubt his legacy.
When I was 21, I heard a wise man say, give crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free. But I was 21, no use to talk to me. The heart out of the bosom was never given in vain. 'Tis paid with sighs aplenty, and sold for endless rue. And I am 22, and oh, 'tis true, 'tis true.
This poem is quite important, as after Professor Ellis Fowler releases his students early due to the Christmas break, he is called into the headmaster's office.
Pleasance plays Fowler as a touch absent-minded, which is understandable as yet again, he is supposed to be elderly. The headmaster, who is played by Liam Sullivan, who had a turn in the equally powerful Twilight Zone episode entitled The Silence, has asked the professor into his office because the Board of Trustees had sent him a letter, an important one, and Fowler has yet to respond. Fowler sheepishly admits that due to the term papers and such, he hasn't opened his mail in a couple of weeks, but that he's already positive what the board's letter entails.
Professor Ellis Fowler is quite mistaken on this matter, though. He believes it is the renewing of his teaching contract, when it is in fact his forced resignation.
That is a harsh way to put it, projectionist.
It is the truth of the matter, is it not?
No, not really. It's a retirement. In fact, the headmaster informs we the viewers that Fowler reached the retirement age more than a few years ago.
Potato, potato.
I'm sorry, my friend, but you're wrong on this. This hasn't been done out of any maliciousness. The headmaster and the board have nothing but admiration and respect for Fowler. They're even granting him half pay for the rest of his days as a sign of that respect. Now, as you can imagine, this comes as a terrible surprise for the professor. Minutes earlier, he'd been excitedly telling the headmaster that he realized that this school year he was teaching the grandson of one of his first students, and proclaimed that he intended to have the honor of teaching a great-grandson of a past pupil before he was done.
While Professor Ellis Fowler does a remarkable job of putting on a brave face for the headmaster, it is quite evident that he's been absolutely crushed by this news.
Yeah, he even makes a joke to the headmaster that this would teach him to open his mail on a regular basis. After leaving the office, he bumps into two of his young students. He passes along his best wishes for the holiday, but then can't hold back tears as he walks away. The knowledge that he has spent his last hours as a teacher is just too much to bear. Later that evening, at his home, a dark cloud hovers over the elderly man. Listening to the radio in his study, I think it's safe to say that he is suffering from a melancholy state of mind. We even see the professor unlock a bottom desk drawer, taking a moment to look inside, where we can see a service pistol in its holster. It's pretty evident where Fowler's dark thoughts are leading him, as he's been spending the evening looking over school yearbooks, reminiscing on the many boys that he has taught over 51 years. As we can see, though, when his kindly housekeeper, Mrs. Landers, arrives to inform him dinner is ready, the professor has passed the point of being depressed and become, well, bitter about his career as a teacher. Fowler has been presented as such a light-hearted individual that his tone is quite shocking and quite moving as he talks with Mrs. Landers about what he's accomplished as a teacher.
They all come and go like ghosts. Faces, names, smiles, funny things they said, or sad things, or the poignant ones. I gave them nothing. I gave them nothing at all. Poetry that left their minds the minute they themselves left. Aged slogans that were out of date when I taught them. Quotations dear to me that were meaningless to them. As a failure, Mrs. Landers, an abject, miserable failure. I walked from class to class, an old relic, teaching by rote to unhearing ears, unwilling heads. As an abject, dismal failure, I moved nobody. I motivated nobody. I left no imprint on anybody. Now, where do you suppose I ever got the idea that I was accomplishing anything?
I will second Sage's comment before that audio clip. thanks to the mastery of Donald Pleasance.
And Serling's teleplay.
Yes, I was getting to that. Thanks to the combination of the actor's talent and the script, you will experience a breaking of the heart as Professor Ellis Fowler comes to the conclusion that his life was misspent.
The professor, seeing that he has worried Mrs. Landers with his outburst, is quick to apologize about the statement. Begging off dinner, he mentions that it might be best if he were to go and lay down for a rest. As he leaves the room to head upstairs, the housekeeper tidies up his untouched dinner, when she happens to spy a key he left on the desk.
Indeed. That key, of course, fits the lower drawer of the desk. But we can see now. Oh my! The service revolver is missing from its holster.
Exactly. Mrs. Landers knows what is supposed to be there and is frantic as she calls Fowler's name. But as she exits his study, we can see the elderly man has left the house, leaving the door wide open, as well as a track through the growing piles of snow outside. It's pretty evident that poor Professor Fowler is planning on taking his own life, doing so at the school behind a statue of Horace Mann, someone that Fowler holds in great respect as he bends down to wipe the snow off the plaque in front of the statue, which reads, "Be ashamed to die until you have won some victory for humanity." This, by the way, just so happens to be the Antioch College motto, which is where Mann was not only the first president, but Rod Serling earned his bachelor's degree, and accepted a teaching position himself the very year this episode aired.
Really? It seems that Serling then put a bit of himself into the character of Professor Ellis Fowler, eh?
Absolutely. Although I don't believe Serling ever contemplated suicide. He was just quite fed up with his sparring with sponsors in the CBS studio over the scripts for The Twilight Zone. Anyway, back to the synopsis. Fowler announces to the statue of Mann that he's provided nothing and is too old to make his mark. He raises the gun to his head, but is stopped when he hears the school bells begin to ring out.
Remember, this is in the evening. No one should be present at the school for boys.
Exactly. Fowler even mentions to himself that there isn't any special assembly planned, so he goes to investigate. The bells continue to ring out until he steps into his old classroom. Before his eyes, the images of young men, their heads bowed, materialize in the previously empty seats and desks. Fowler is quite understandably shocked by the appearance of these apparitions. We quickly learn that these are a handful of the very students he mentioned earlier as he was looking over the yearbooks in his study. These former students all have one thing in common. They have passed away. It would seem these men, who died in their prime, want to impart the impact the professor had on their own lives. Three students in particular step forward. Artie Beechcroft, who perished at Iwo Jima, proudly showing off his Congressional Medal of Honor, explaining that through Fowler's class, he was made to understand the concept of courage. A second former pupil rises after Fowler emotionally tells Beechcroft how proud he was to read of the young men's bravery in the newspaper. This second student is named Bartlett and is quick to share what he learned from Fowler's class.
Sir, I'm Bartlett, third form, class of 28. I died in Roanoke, Virginia, sir. I was conducting research on X-ray treatment for cancer. I was exposed to radioactivity and I contracted leukemia.
I remember. Do remember now, Butler. That was an incredibly brave thing you did, Butler.
I kept remembering, Professor, something you told me. A quote, a poet named Walter.
Howard Arnold Walter, I remember.
He said, "I would be true, for there are those who trust me. I would be pure, for there are those who care. I would be strong. There is much to suffer, and I would be brave, for there is much to dare." I never forgot that, Professor. That was something that you left me, and I never forgot it.
Very decent of you, Bartlett, to say that.
The third student to address Professor Ellis Fowler is Dickie Weiss. who we were made to understand was the first of the professor's former students to perish at Pearl Harbor. But not before the brave young man had saved some of his fellow sailors from the sinking ship. Dicky Weiss goes on to explain that he felt as if his former teacher was at his elbow the day he lost his life saving those others. He quotes a poem by John Donne. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never sin to know for whom the bells toll. It tolls for thee.
Well done, projectionist. Maybe we need to start a new podcast where you just recite poetry. With aid from the Twilight Zone, Professor Fowler is given the rare gift of being made aware that the love he had for his profession and for his students, the lessons they carried with them through their lives, have in fact helped him win a victory for humanity. Before the students return to their desks and bow their heads again and disappear from view, Beechcroft informs the professor they just wanted to let him know how much he had shaped their lives.
Realizing he has secured such a victory has changed Professor Ellis Fowler's outlook completely. Being able to accept his retirement now, gratefully, knowing he has made his mark.
And that is the full synopsis for The Changing of the Guard, listeners. Projectionist, do you have anything to share this go-around?
Indeed I do.
Weekends are a good time to escape to the woods. Unless the weekend begins with Friday the 13th. Because 13 is an unlucky number. But out here, so are 1 through 12. Because these are Jason's woods. And nobody leaves them alive. Friday the 13th, Part 3. Jason. You can't fight him. You can't stop him. And now, you can't even keep him on the screen. Friday the 13th, Part 3. When it comes to killing in Jason's woods, Jason will come to you. Friday the 13th, Part 3. A new dimension in terror. It will scare you. Count on it.
Earlier that you watched this television episode at a low point in your life. Would you care to expand on that?
Not really, projectionist. Let me just say that I had reached a point where it was dawning on me that I was never going to become a filmmaker. My work schedule kept me from having the luxury of spending much time with my friends. I think each and every one of us encounter a moment where we unfortunately think that things aren't going to become better, and so we let it begin to wear on us, day after day. As a treat to myself, I picked up a Twilight Zone VHS tape that included The Changing of the Guard, and I want to say Mr. Denton on Doomsday, but I could be wrong about that. After watching it, I found myself feeling quite a bit better about my situation. Anyway, Rod Serling only taught for 4 or 5 months at Antioch. But it apparently was exactly what he needed, a chance to go home, so to speak, which is something we have seen was a desire that Serling had with his teleplays for other Twilight Zone episodes like Walking Distance, A Stop at Willoughby, Young Man's Fancy, and even The Incredible World of Horace Ford. Although each of those present receiving the gift of returning home just a bit differently from the others. After finishing his stint as a professor, Serling returned to what was now being called Twilight Zone. They had dropped the V, Only 20 episodes were filmed, as the show was scheduled as a mid-season replacement. It had in fact been canceled after the end of season 3. Furthermore, CBS demanded that the 30-minute format be expanded now to an hour, something that Serling and everyone on the show thought was a mistake. And I honestly think while there are some good episodes in season 4, the longer format didn't play to the series' strengths. Thankfully, with season 5, CBS, learning the error of its ways, returned the show to the 30-minute length. Director Robert Ellis Miller continued to work mostly on television shows, like Ben Casey and The Donna Reed Show, but he also directed 1966 Any Wednesday, which starred Jane Fonda, Jason Robards, and Dean Jones, as well as 1989's Brenda Starr. Liam Sullivan, who played the headmaster, passed away in 1998 with 122 acting credits, which included 1965's That Darn Cat, so he too worked with Dean Jones. He also appeared in Lost in Space, Misfits of Science, and 1986's Wisdom, to name a few. Then we have the legendary Donald Pleasance, who passed on in 1995 with a total of 234 acting credits, ranging from 1960's The Flesh and the Fiends, which was the story of the infamous grave robbers and murderers Burke and Hare, 1963's epic The Great Escape, 1965's The Greatest Story Ever Told, where Pleasance played none other than Satan, 1967's You Only Live Twice, and in that same year, Will Penny. Of course, I knew him best from his role in John Carpenter's Halloween from 1978 as Dr. Sam Loomis, the man who took up a crusade to stop the evil that was Michael Myers.
Do not forget he played B.D. Hoffler in that same year.
Who?
From Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. You know, starring the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton.
I don't even know what to say. I can't believe you even know about that movie. You never struck me as a fan of Beatles music.
I'm not. I enjoy the Bee Gees.
I guess you learn something new every day, right? The Changing of the Guard was adapted by the excellent Twilight Zone radio drama series, with a part of Professor Fowler being played by Being John Malkovich's Orson Bean. And I think that about wraps up the episode.
Hold up, Victor. You forgot to mention the subject of the next radio broadcast.
Oh, while the projectionist was sharing those vintage drive-in ads a few moments ago, we decided that it's been a while since we let you listeners choose what we cover next. So, the ball is in your court, friends. We're looking forward to seeing what you all come up with as suggestions for the next TV show or movie to cover on the podcast. On behalf of the projectionist and myself, we thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. The music you hear at the beginning of the show was provided by Peachy. If you'd like to contact him, you may do so at peachy@retroist.com. The opening narration was provided by Metagirl. And our new ending theme is entitled Twisted Toys and was composed by the talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Of course, I have to give thanks for the invaluable feedback to my co-host, The Projectionist. Where can your fans find you if they wish to contact you?
The easiest way is to sneak up on a murder of crows, and after they have finished their tale, whisper into the biggest of the crows' ears. Or on the Facebooks, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In.
If you happen to be new to our show, we do have a Saturday Frights Facebook page, and we'd greatly appreciate it if you could stop by and give us a like, or even let others know about it. It's the perfect spot where we can share our love of retro horror daily. The podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher, and we would certainly appreciate it if you could click subscribe. Leave us a review if you like the show. Help us get the word out. I can be found nearly every day on The Retroist. If you have any suggestions for future shows or even feedback, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. We owe a great debt of gratitude to the Retroist himself. For your daily retro needs, just head over to www.retroist.com. Until next time, remember to replace your car's speaker on its post before leaving the drive-in.
This has been a RetroWest production. Goodbye.